Now, as many of you probably know, because you probably wouldn't be here otherwise, the Gita forms the very central part of the Mahabharata, which is like this huge scripture. I don't know, probably end to end it stretches to the moon or something. You know? And the two great scriptures of India are the Ramayana, as you know, and the Mahabharata. And this Gita forms the very central heart of it. And it was first translated into English about 200 years ago. And the much loved Warren Hastings, who in the time of the, before the British government went to India, in times of the East India Company, was the Governor General. And he commanded that all his underlings should learn Sanskrit in order that they could greater understand Indian spirituality, in particular the Gita. And of course, since then it's been translated by Christopher Isherwood and Stephen Mitchell and all sorts of people. And so it forms this very core of what's at the heart of Indian spiritual life, much as the Tao Te Ching does in China. You know, these two very small books which really hold the heart of very deep spiritual truths. And we're going to find that today, like their relevance to what goes on in our own lives now, in this century. So, I should now invite... Oh no, I've got to tell you some housekeeping. Please turn off your mobile phones. Please don't take flash pictures. And if there's a fire, follow the ushers, who are these nice girls in blue, out of the door. Okay? That's all. But please turn off your mobile phones, because it's really boring if they go off. Now the thing is, apart from anything else, the Bhagavad Gita is a ripping yarn. It really is. And so to bring this ripping yarn to life, and those of you who don't know much about it, to like put it in a context so that Sister Sudesh, who's talking later, can really get to grips with the philosophy of it. So to tell you like the broad picture in a fabulously exciting way, which will really lift you off your seats and get the afternoon off to something really wonderful, is Ravi Khanna.
The day of the battle dawned very brightly. The pennants and the flags of the chiefs and the princes and the kings present on that battlefield fluttered in the breeze. But the air was resonant with fearful sounds. Drums rolling, the blow of conch shells, neighing and whinnying of horses, and the dreadful trumpeting of elephants. Arjuna, the foremost warrior of the Pandav clan, sat on his chariot. And as he gazed into the distance, across the divide that separated these two armies, he began to reflect on what lay before him. But as he looked, he began to see in the front ranks of the opposite army faces that were familiar. The elders of the Kaurav clan, his beloved uncles and aunts, his family that had taught him everything he knew about being a prince. He was reminded of them. He saw the very teachers that had taught him to hold a bow and to wrestle and to fence and all the arts of being a soldier. Indeed, the very teacher that had trained Arjuna to focus his eye and his mind simply and solely on the target in front of him stood there on the opposite side. And of course, his cousins, the 100 Kaurava brothers, sat in the opposing army facing him. And as he began to realize, as it dawned on him what he was about to do, he began to shake. Tears flooded down his cheeks. His knees began to tremble, and his hands shook so much that the bow began to slip. He sunk back into his chariot and began to wonder what had happened. For it had only been 20 years ago that he, his brothers, the 5 Pandav brothers, shared the same palace as these Kaurav cousins of his. And okay, the eldest Kaurava cousin, Duryodhana, had not been the nicest of people to them. For Duryodhana had poisoned their food. He had bound them with ropes and thrown them into the river in the hope that they would drown. Indeed, Duryodhana had even given them a palace as a gift. But in the palace walls was wax and straw. And one night when the Pandava brothers were asleep, Duryodhana lit a match in the hope that the brothers would burn with the palace. But even as Arjuna thought of these things, in his heart he felt no hatred, for he remembered that to be a prince was to be royal in thought, word and deed. And was not forgiveness an important part of being a king? But then Arjuna also remembered how Duryodhana had tricked Arjuna's eldest brother in a game of dice, tricked him into losing their whole empire, and meaning that the Pandav brothers had been exiled into the forest for 13 years. But then again, Duryodhana was jealous, for not only were the Pandavas better looking than him, but the people loved them. And Duryodhana was so scared that one day the people of Hastinapur would ask Arjuna and Yudhishthira to be the kings rather than he. Arjuna sat back and looked over to his behind him where there was Krishna, his charioteer. He threw down his bow and said to Krishna, "Krishna, I will not fight this war. I will not kill my cousins. I will not kill my family. Why should I? For the sake of a piece of land? Not me." And he threw his bow down. Now Krishna had the most foremost armies in the land, and his armies he'd given to the Kauravas and to Duryodhana because he could not completely take sides one brother against another. But whilst his armies went to the Kauravas, Krishna stayed with the Pandavas, not to bear arms, but agreed just to help. And Krishna knew that this was a crisis. Here, the foremost soldier of the Pandav clan, on the very eve of the battle, had given in. He wanted to surrender. And whilst Krishna understood the turmoil that must be happening in Arjuna's mind, Krishna also knew that the Pandav clan was committed to this war, and there was now no going back. So Krishna stood, placed his hand on Arjuna's shoulder, and spoke gentle and encouraging words to the soldier. Krishna told Arjuna of the eternal nature of the soul. He told Arjuna, reminded him of what his duty as a warrior prince really was. Arjuna expressed his doubts. But Krishna explained, "Don't worry. The mind is a restless thing. But with practice, with meditation, with control, you can bring your mind to peace." And finally, Krishna reminded Arjuna that real action, pure action, the right thing was only a matter of doing the action in God's remembrance. And if on that battlefield Arjuna fought and did so for the love of God and the love of doing the right thing, then God would make sure that action was pure and brought no burden to him or to the kingdom. And this touched a longing within Arjuna. a longing to know God and a longing to be with God. And at that moment, right there on the battlefield, Arjuna had a vision of the divine. The world stopped, and all he could sense was the divine. And after the vision, his heart that had faltered was now strong. The doubts and the confusion in his mind had gone, and instead there was the light of wisdom. So he reached out and held his bow, pulled up to his chest. For one last moment, remembered the loving being, his father, his God. And then turned back to Krishna, his faithful charioteer, and said, Krishna, let us go forth into battle. Let us seek the enemy and let us do what is right. And so the battle began. And it raged for 18 days. It was fierce. Sometimes the Kauravas were won. Sometimes the Pandavas would win. From day to day, we did not know what would happen. But finally, Duryodhana and his fearsome corps of soldiers were slaughtered. The enemy was vanquished, and thanks largely to the advice and guidance given by Krishna and the Pandavas' willingness and bravery to follow his orders, the Pandavas won. Yudhishthira, the eldest Pandav, was reinstated as king. And for many, many years to come, because of the wise, benevolent, and righteous rule of the Pandav brothers, the kingdom of Hastinapur lived in peace and happiness.
So Ravi has given you a great picture of the sort of material side of the Bhagavad Gita, like the war in which, the physical war in which what many people see as the mental war, the more important war, is set. Like there were all these enemies on the Kaurava side, who incidentally, I mean, they didn't really pick up very deeply Duryodhana and the lads. They didn't quite get to the heart of spiritual understanding in India, you'd have to say, whereas Arjuna sort of did. So in the second part of today's program, we're going to invite Sudesh Didi, who's a very senior teacher from the BKs, and who has in fact been studying the Gita for many years, or many years before she joined the BKs. At the age of 3, she was reading it. At the age of 9, she was studying it. So there you are. So she's a great authority on it. So that's really the heart of what we're going to do today. Although you can see the enemies, as Sudesh I'm sure will tell us, the enemies, as Ravi said, were physical enemies. The real enemies that attack us, as I'm sure Sudesh Didi will get into in some detail, are things like anger and greed and frustration and those people that push our buttons. And so we want to know, how do we deal with that? And it's things like the Gita that tell us, particularly when they're properly interpreted. So Sudesh Didi is European director of the BKs, and she looks after one of the major centres in Europe, in Frankfurt, in Germany. And she's opened many centres in many places, because the BKs have centres scattered liberally around the world. So Sudesh Didi, please come and join us.
Om Shanti. Or shall I say today, Om Anand. I'm bliss. What brings bliss, joy in our life? Before bliss comes the truth. truth is revealed, given by the truth himself, which is experienced